New and updated guidelines will help Canadian ophthalmologists screen, diagnose, and treat patients with glaucoma more effectively. Dr. Sean L. Cohen discusses the need for those guidelines and the issues they encompass.
Glaucoma is defined as a multifactorial optic neuropathy. An estimated 300,000 Canadians are affected with glaucoma. Glaucoma itself is difficult to diagnose, and about half of the Canadians aren't aware of it because it doesn't have any symptoms. It is something that doesn't lead a patient to come for regular eye exams, and it's hard to get the population to realize the need for that. And as the population ages, there is more and more of a need to screen for glaucoma. There are a number of treatment options available, from medications to older oral pill medications to laser therapy and even surgeries. But the trouble is getting patients that really are at high risk to recognize that they might be at high risk and present for referral. And it's also hard to have even distribution of ophthalmologic services given the rising healthcare costs and understaffing in various areas of the country of ophthalmologists. And there's also an uneven availability of technology with respect to diagnostic screening equipment. These factors make it difficult to diagnose.
The guideline features several treatment algorithms, including one for addressing the patient who has been referred because of a concern about glaucoma. Dr. Cohen discusses the suggestions for assessing such patients.
When we're talking about screening for glaucoma, the first thing that happens is a patient will present either to an optometrist or to an ophthalmologist, and there'll be an overall examination, which may have nothing to do with what ultimately becomes the final diagnosis. Once there's a concern for glaucoma, then we'll go back on the examination and repeat part of the examination to specifically look at some of the risk assessment and the full eye exam that's related to glaucoma. That begins with a general medical history, things such as low blood pressure and diabetes that may be contributing to glaucoma, an ocular history such as trauma, family history of similar conditions, age of the patient's important, their previous pressures if they have anything, and of course race is important, African Americans being at higher risk than Caucasians for open angle glaucoma, presence of high nearsightedness or myopia, and other things that may be prominent, including certain vascular syndromes like Raynaud's syndromes, migraine, or other neurological diseases. Then the exam is conducted, and at that point we're looking for the best corrected visual acuity and an examination of the eye, and we're looking at the intraocular pressure and the thickness of the cornea to correct the intraocular pressure. We'll also look at the angles of the eye. Then we'll look at the back of the eye. Once all these factors are put together, a diagnosis is made, which we'll call a working diagnosis, and either we decide the patient is normal or that the condition is unrelated to glaucoma, or the patient is a suspect for glaucoma, in which case we'll follow a different algorithm, and or the patient has open-eye glaucoma, or they may have a different type of glaucoma, like narrow angle or angle closure or neovascular glaucoma, which requires a completely different method of investigation and therapy.
Next, Dr. Cohen discusses the guideline-suggested algorithm used only when assessing the glaucoma suspect. People can qualify as glaucoma suspects if they have an elevated IOP, which is defined as exceeding 21 millimeters of mercury, or if there are other characteristics of the eye or vision test results that may be suspicious.
Once somebody's been deemed to be a suspect for glaucoma, they're innocent until proven guilty or guilty until proven innocent, depending on the level of suspicion. And that involves either the pressure is higher than what we call normal, which is the usual range of 10 to 21, or their optic nerve head looks suspicious, or there's an asymmetry between the two eyes and the optic nerve, or the visual field or the peripheral vision is affected in some way that looks suspicious. Other risk factors are going to be considered as well, and that may lead us to tip into whether or not we would decide to treat or not treat, whether or not we feel the patient is at low, medium, or high risk of future development of glaucoma. If we feel that the patient is at low risk and we decide not to treat, then we should see the patient every 4 to 12 months, depending on our worry for the patient. And if we decide to treat, then we'll go into a whole different algorithm and probably see the patient back much earlier to assess the response to therapy.
If a patient is diagnosed with open-angle glaucoma, another treatment algorithm is recommended, which Dr. Cohen discusses.
Based on some work that was done in 2003, there was a group of ophthalmologists that met across Canada, glaucoma specialists, and decided on a definition for early, moderate, and advanced glaucoma, open angle. Target pressures were established with a range of pressures for each of these conditions. And the definitions are outlined and repeated in the algorithm of staging presented, which is open-angle glaucoma early, moderate, and advanced, early being glaucoma with a cup-disc ratio of less than 0.65 or the presence of a mild visual field defect, which is different from the American definition. Moderate glaucomatous disc features a vertical cup-disc ratio of 0.7 to 0.85 or moderate field. In other words, the central 10 degrees of fixation, the central visual acuity, is not affected. Or both are affected, so you can have either the disc changes or the visual field, or both. In advanced cases, the cup-to-disc ratio is above or equal to 0.9, and there is a visual field defect that threatens fixation. Either one or both of those may be occurring. And based on that model, we then decide on therapy.
Once a patient's diagnosis of glaucoma has been confirmed and staged, treatment goals are set for improved IOP.
These targets that were recommended at the time have subsequently been reviewed through various meetings and discussions amongst the Canadian Glaucoma Society members. For instance, in early glaucoma, we recommend reducing the pressure from the baseline maximum pressure by about 20% or more, and that usually comes to less than or equal to 21 millimeters of mercury. In moderate and advanced case, you recommend more than or equal to 30% based on the evidence that's available currently. And moderate glaucoma pressure less than 18, and in advanced cases less than 15. In some cases, we may wish to be more aggressive than this and drop the case in moderate pressures down to about 15 and advanced about even 10 to 12 if there is very severe glaucoma, or if we're very much afraid of further progression. None of these things are written in stone. It's an assessment based on the literature of what we believe would be the target pressure or the range of pressures at which we feel the patient would be less likely to show progression.
After treatment is initiated, Dr. Cohen says the ophthalmologist will want to follow the patient to see if the treatment is effective and whether there are any barriers to the patient being treated optimally, including what he calls the anxiety filter.
When we look at a patient and we are trying to establish the target IOP, assess the response to therapy, depending on how worried we are and how much time we feel we have to establish the target pressure being reached, we may decide to change our therapy, become more or less aggressive, or move on to the next stage. For instance, if medical therapy is taking 6 months to achieve, through all the different permutations and combinations, and the nerve is far too advanced, we may move on to laser or surgical therapy sooner. If there's a mild disease, we may have the luxury of time of trying to work on this a little bit longer. It also depends on the compliance of the patient, the life expectancy of the patient, and the other factors of the patient, including the quality of life from all the therapy we're giving, and economic factors of whether or not these medications are affordable to the patient, as well as side effects. So if there's been a reduction of 20 to 30% from the baseline, and we call that a positive response, target pressure has been reached, and the patient is felt to be stable, you can then follow them up at an appropriate level, which we'll get into. But if the target hasn't been reached, for instance, it's less than a 20% reduction from the baseline pressure, we would then consider changing the therapy or adding the therapy, or alternate therapies such as moving on to laser or surgery. And then follow-up would be sooner to establish that this circuit has been continued until the target pressure has been achieved.
Depending on the stability of the patient's glaucoma, different follow-up schedules are recommended in the guidelines.
Patients with stable disease can be seen less frequently, let's say every 6 to 12 months, usually every 6 months, because even stable patients can become unstable. Depends on the severity of the disease. If it's an advanced glaucoma patient, we want to follow them a lot sooner. And stability is dependent on three things: whether or not the intraocular pressure is stable, consistent across visits and achieved a target level, whether the optic nerve head and the visual field also remain stable, and whether or not the patient is free from significant side effects that could interfere with therapy. And if they're free of those, then we can continue to follow up on regular intervals. we recommend that once anything becomes unstable, either the target pressure isn't reached, the nerve or visual field change, or the significant side effects, and a change is required in the therapy, that the patient be seen shortly thereafter, usually within a month or two of any change being instituted, so that its impact can be assessed on the patient. The most important take-home message from the Canadian Glaucoma Strategy is that these are guidelines. They're not meant to replace clinical judgment. It's rather to assist in clinical judgment. Each patient has to be treated as an individual.
This has been an educational activity published by PeerView Press.